From cookies to commerce, unleashing your inner grit, perseverance, passion, and purpose. Insights from Sherman Perryman. Welcome back to another episode of the All Things Black Podcast, the podcast that celebrates Black excellence in all its forms. I'm your host, Daryl Barnes, and today we have a truly inspiring figure with us, Mr. Sherman Perryman, who has emerged as a beacon of resilience and empowerment from a background steeped in discipline and determination. He's the founder of the Militant Grind, and his journey is one of unwavering spirit and transformative possibilities. Today, we dive into his remarkable story and the philosophy that drives him here on the All Things Black Podcast. Before we get into our episode, I want to welcome the listening audience, the new subscribers, and to my day ones. Thank you so much. So with that, I want to welcome our guest, Sherman Perryman, to the show. Sherman, how you doing, sir?
Great, brother. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing well. I want to thank you so much for being on this episode of this podcast.
Man, it's a pleasure to be here, man. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for making it happen, man. It's really a pleasure.
Yes, sir. So let's get right into it. Sherman, your journey began in humble aisles of a church, correct? You were like selling cookies and internalizing invaluable lessons of grit and commerce. With that, how did those early experiences shape your entrepreneurial spirit?
Well, it's kind of interesting because now, like talking to my mother, she says that I was someone that sold the most, you know, and I kind of looked at it as like a competition because my parents will say, hey, if you want to do this, you have to do this. And so my why was, okay, I'm going to sell all of these cookies. And then after I sell them, we're going to go eat the dinner. I really want the dinner at this restaurant called Pop's Restaurant, right? So I just went as hard as I possibly could to accomplish that goal. So I kind of like, it wasn't more so me enjoying selling the cookies and commerce. It was more so what the commerce could do for me, which is provide me things that I wanted. So with that skill, you know, we ended up moving to Carson, California when I was 10 years old. And Carson had a lot of spoiled children, you know, or children that just had clothes, shoes. You know, back in the 90s, gear was everything. So Tommy Hilfiger, FUBU, you know, all of these name brand clothes. And, you know, hindsight looking back, and me being a father as well, and my parents having to take care of five kids, there's no way you could afford, you know, FUBU and Jordans for everybody in the family. Like, that's not happening. And the majority of kids that did have it like that, they were the only child. So just looking at it economically, it just wasn't feasible. But at the end of the day, I wanted those shoes. So I had to go buy shoes and clothes, et cetera, right? So I had to go buy what I knew what to do, you know, to get them. So I ended up selling candy in the sixth grade because I was like, look, man, I could be teased for wearing fake Tommy Hilfiger, fake FUBU, all of this stuff. So instead of going through that, I would rather figure out a way to make money on my own so I could afford the type of clothes that I want. So I use those motivating factors to push me to be able to deal within that realm, you know, because some people, they're just like, okay, you know, I look at it like this. If you don't need it, if it's not necessary to you, you won't really figure out a way to make it happen. So it wouldn't make sense for a child that had a parent that would buy them the clothes and shoes or whatever to instill entrepreneurship in them or give them a way to hustle or whatever when they had everything provided to them. And luckily, I wasn't one of those children, so I just made it happen on my own.
So yeah, I heard a lot in that. That was actually quite a bit. And then I can only imagine coming from one state to Carson, California, which I've heard quite a bit about.
No. I always lived in L.A.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. So that's just like an area in L.A. But yeah, it was like, say I grew up, first I was in San Pedro, which was predominantly white and Hispanic. I was the only black kid in the class, so it was a different environment. And then moving to Carson, you know, which was like a mile away from Compton. So the majority of my friends was from Compton and LA and Watts, you know, but, and that's, you know, because my parents ended up buying a house. And yeah, it was just different, man. It's like we had issues within the Black community or a culture that I wasn't used to at all. Like nobody cared about shoes and clothes and the way you looked in the white and Hispanic community. Like right. That was not, you know, that wasn't a factor. Like nobody cared. But when I moved to, you know, the inner city, it was like, whoa.
Yeah, you had to bring it, man.
That was the main focus almost the whole, you know, the whole school year, you know?
Yep. You had to bring it. You had to act like, you know, you had it together, even though you may not have had together. Mom and dad may not have a ton of money to do that. But when you went into that doorway to the classrooms or inside the school, oh yeah, you had to look like something. You know, you definitely had to look like something. So yeah, that was a different experience altogether. Mm-hmm. So that motivated you, you know, to really get out there and hustle and go from there. So with the candy, is there anything else, any other entrepreneurial things that you got into or invested in from just the base of just selling the candy and the cookies and anything?
Oh man, when high school came, it was crazy because that's when mix CDs came out. So I was burning CDs for people. I sold, cause and there was a time where people put Gucci material on their Air Forces and on their clothes. So I found somebody online that was selling Gucci material. So I used to sell that to people, like 12 by 12 pieces. Yeah, man, it's like almost anything that I could find for the low besides drugs or anything illegal. I was trying to flip, you know.
Yeah, totally, man. And that's why I was asking you, because it sounded like the initial, you know, selling of the cookies and the candy, that was the springboard to other opportunities and entrepreneurial businesses from such a young age, which catapulted you to where you are now. Correct?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Cause I, you know, it's kind of like, sometimes I'd be thinking like, okay, I could assimilate, but then, you know, ever since I was young, I've always felt, you know, I was just more so in control and felt the need to make my own money and do for self, you know? So that just became like one of the, you know, the most thrilling things in my life. You know, sometimes I do wish that I was able to have a job and be comfortable and not worry and everything like that. Like I really tell people like, man, like I wish I could wake up every day and go to the job for the same job for 30 years and have a retirement. Like that is an effortless, easy life to me. Like, you know how much you're going to get paid.
Yeah. Week. Yeah.
You know, you have the ultimate security, and I'm all about security. Right. But unfortunately, you know, that's just not me, you know? So I have to put my all into this. And sometimes it's working harder than I would ever will, you know, at a job, you know, for myself, you know what I'm saying?
You went to Morehouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here in Atlanta, which of course, you know, they talk about the Morehouse men here. You know, you guys get big props, you know, as Morehouse men. But in Morehouse, you studied, was it?
Business.
Business, gotcha. So business. Yeah. So how did that actually help you in what you're doing right now? And what other programs did you actually study while you were in Morehouse?
I was in the Morehouse Business Association. I feel like it helped me learn processes and how to actually like establish a business versus just hustling, you know, like learning marketing, business, law, ethics, economics, and all of that. I feel like that really helped me see it from more of a macro view rather than micro, you know. And I feel like education is very important when it comes to us wanting to succeed in the business world, period, because a lot of us, we take our hustles and then we want to develop a business, but we don't learn the business processes or procedures or how to do like all of these different things. And, you know, we when we start, we have to either learn how to do it ourselves or we have to pay someone else to do it. And sometimes we don't have the money to pay someone else. So you have to be the lawyer. You have to be the accountant. You have to be the person, the manager to set up the procedures or, you know, bookkeeper. You have to pay all of these different roles. And when you're in college, it kind of like teaches you how to implement all of those roles through education, just in case you need to, you know, like in case you need it, you know, like if you say, I hate math, you probably don't want to be in business for yourself. If you say, I don't know how to use Excel, you probably don't want to be in business for yourself. So I ended up taking a lot of those skills that I've learned from, you know, just taking business classes, period, and implementing that for myself. And I am like, I feel like I'm one of the most wonderful people I've ever known when it comes to business development. Like I'm very organized, you know, very structured in how I delegate and how I actually, move. But then is, you know, education is further than, you know, just 4 years in school. You also have to, you know, I feel like with YouTube University or you just taking a class to get a certificate or whatever, you know, the learning is continuous, but there needs to be some type of foundation that provides that, you know, and I feel like school is perfect for it. And now a lot of people are saying, well, the hell with school, you don't need it. I mean, I understand, but, you know, some people don't. But then it's all to me as a business person, it's always valuable to know what's going on in your business and to know how processes work, because a lot of people aren't fair, and you will not know that they're not fair if you don't know what they're supposed to be doing, you know? So I'll just leave it at that. Like, I've met so many dishonest people or people that try to tell me something. I'm like, well, hold on, because I'm not hiring you for your, you know, for your expertise. I'm more so likely hiring you so you could just do the tasks that I don't have time to do. You know, like, I already know what you're supposed to do. So if you don't come up with those expectations that I know of based off my research, then I kind of know what's going on.
And some of us take business as a hustle. There is hustle in business, but some of us look at it as a straight hustle. And I think a lot of times we may fall by the wayside by looking at it as a hustle instead of an actual business. What's your thoughts on that?
As far as like hustling versus business?
Hustling versus business. Right, exactly.
Well, I mean, like, you have to start off hustling, you know, but then in order for you to have a business, well, let's say, you know, a lot of people will say I'm a boss or I'm a CEO or I'm this or I'm that, right? But they take on those titles because they're hustling. But in, you know, in retrospect, when you look at it, it's like you're not really a boss if you don't have employees. You can become a CEO by just paying a state filing, you know, to own a corporation and say you're a CEO. But that doesn't mean you're actually running a corporation. That doesn't mean you have people in place that help this operate. So we kind of mislead ourselves by hustling to make us think that we're actually running a business. And I see now in the Black community, a lot of people are in love with titles more than actually being productive. Like, there's so many people that are quick to say, I got my real estate license. Okay, cool. A lot of people have their real estate license. But in order for you to be successful in real estate, you have to be a hell of a salesperson. And you have to contact 100 people a day, every day. You know, it's a grind. So, yes, you have the opportunity to make however much money you want to make, $100,000 a year, $300,000, whatever. But if you don't have those skills that can help you make that amount of money, then it's not even, it's just a waste of time. Like, a lot, I see it so much, especially on, you know, social media. I'm this. And we're happy for them. But then after a couple months, you observe the situation and you see that nothing came about it because they're more so in love with the title more than they're in love with the process.
Wow. Okay. I'm glad I asked you that question. Yeah. And I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. Moving on. How did your failures, and I'm not, because I don't know, but I'm assuming, or just in kind of in, you know, just researching, a lot of people had a lot of failures before they had successes. If you did have failures, how did your failures fare in the development of you being where you're at now?
I feel like I'm always failing, because if you're not failing, you're not trying to do anything. So that's a continuous thing. But like, there's no such thing as me hitting the pinnacle of success, because when you try to do new things or try to be more you're gonna fail. Like, that's period. But then with those failures, something is gonna stick. You know, something is gonna be okay. Oh, wow, this works. All right, let me keep on with this, and then I'm add to this, and then see what happens with that. You know, like, it's if you're a business person, you have to be comfortable and used to failing. Like, period. I've tried to do a lot of things that I thought, you know, were going to be successful that ended up plummeting and ended up wasting thousands of dollars. And it's like, oh, okay, well, let's try something else. Oh, this one works. All right, let's stick with this for a while. Oh, well, you know, a new software came out to basically deplete you and all of your clients. Oh, well, you got to try something new now. So, you know, especially these days, if you're not constantly reinventing yourself or constantly trying to, you know, be better and do better, I have no idea how you're going to make it, because it's, you know, technology, you know, people being able to communicate with people all around the world, you know, everybody's competing for market share. So it's like, you have to continuously innovate. And when you innovate, you're going to fail. So I don't even want to make it even seem like I'm successful or anything, because there's a lot of ways where people could say I am. But then there's a lot of ways I myself could say I'm not, you know. So as long as I keep innovating, man, it's like failure. I just embrace it in open arms. Like, come on, I already know you're gonna hit me. So come on, let's go.
Gotcha. So we're gonna move forward. Right now, when I did a little, you know, did a little background on you, did your research, you were featured as a prominent person in a docuseries, Black Business Los Angeles. Can you tell us or tell me a little about the message, the legacy, and the message that you guys tried to convey in the in that appearance in that series? Answer that question for me.
Yeah, I got you. Well, actually, I'm the executive producer behind the series. And I produce it. So I'm behind the scenes and I'm also featured in it as well. And the way it came about was a friend of mine's husband was doing the docuseries by himself. And in LA, I have like a ton of connections. Like, I'm probably 1 degree of separation from any celebrity or anybody you could possibly name in LA. Like, a lot of people know who I am. And I'm a businessman and I did taxes and, you know, financial stuff for a lot of people. So I also know a lot of Black business owners within the community. And when I see him post about him not being, he's not native to LA. He was like, yeah, you know, it's kind of tough doing this on my own and da 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 da. And I was like, hey man, like I'll help you, you know, cause I kind of know how it is. Like, in LA, you have to be in the in crowd. And if nobody knows you, it's going to be hard for you to connect with anybody. So once I got on it and people seen that I was involved, now the whole city wants to get behind it, because it's like, okay, if Sherman's behind it, you know, I trust it. He's, you know, I know him. We did business together, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I know if he's with it, then it must be something. So that's honestly how that came about. And then the director also and the filmmaker also asked me if I would speak on it as well. And I actually have. So yeah, man, I really feel like it's important for a lot of us to see Black entrepreneurs and their struggles and how they actually became successful, you know, with their endeavors. So I'm very passionate about that, because I do know that I am a firm believer in leading by example. So if, you know, I'm a young kid and I see a docuseries and it's just like a bunch of Black people owning businesses doing their thing, and I just don't only see Black people as employees or working for the state or, you know, with the same type of stuff that I grew up seeing, it's inspiring. So I'm happy that I was able to be a part of something like that and actually showcase that to the world, because I've never seen anything like it. Like, I've never seen a show that was or a series or whatever that was reality that showed us doing anything productive, meaningful, and something that could possibly make a change in other people's lives. So, you know, I'm really proud of that. And I stood by it. We're, you know, post-production now, coming out with the first episode. And I'm a firm believer that this is going to end up changing a lot of people's lives. And through this, it's not just talk. We actually see well-known Black establishments giving their stories on how they maintain, because a lot of us think that if someone does have a business, they're successful, but really it's not that, you know, they're successful. It's more so they stuck with it and they went through the storm, and they're probably going through a storm right now, but they're keeping their head down and they're just continuously going. So it's good for us to see that.
So perseverance, grind through it. You know what I'm saying? Even if it looks like you're going to fail, just keep persevering. And I think that's actually great messaging. For those that have not seen Black Business Los Angeles, where can they go? What platform can they go and look at that docuseries?
They could actually just find some references online, like our website, also Black Business LA series on Instagram. But it's not out yet. We're in post-production, so it's going to take us a while. Like, we're actually finishing up our first episode. It's an independent series, but we don't have no big time production company backing us. So it's taking us a lot more time. So, you know, in the next couple weeks or so, it should be out. But if you want to just keep your ear to the pavement and, you know, figure out what's going on, you can visit our website, or you could just Google Black Business Los Angeles, see a couple things pop up. And you could also follow us on Instagram as well to see any updates.
So you're not just defined by your business finesse, right? You're also an author. Can you share some insights with your book? Because the book, I believe, is called From Grit to Greatness, Harnessing the Five Pillars of the Militant Grind. Can you give us a little bit of information about that and what kind of springboarded the idea of you actually authoring a book?
Honestly, man, like I was always a guy on Facebook that would write almost an essay and get people to like really in tune with it. So like writing, it was kind of, it's my passion. But then I always been a creative. So me being a creative, you know, I love art. I love how to, you know, paint my thoughts with words and things like that. Like, I feel like I'm a very talented writer. And I could communicate very well through writing, but I had like something blocking me from actually pursuing, you know, writing a book. Like I had Facebook statuses from years ago. I was like, man, I want to write a book, but I never started it. But now I was like, you know what? I'm gonna just do it. And a friend of mine said that with Militant Grind, I need something tangible that people could actually like put in their hand, and I should write a book. And she said that it should be based on five pillars. So I was like, five pillars? And I thought she mentioned the five pillars of Islam, but instead of Islam, do Militant Grind, because I do have an Islamic background. So it was like, oh, okay. And then I thought, love, honor, discipline, wisdom, and strength. You know, so those are like my five pillars. And I was like, you know, I always, because also in Islam, I have a 5% of background too. We have the math, you know, the mathematics, which is knowledge, wisdom, understanding, et cetera, right? And, you know, we go by, okay, what's today's math? To, you know, like say for my birthday on the 29th, 2 is wisdom, 9 is born. So I was born on the day of wisdom born. And so there's symbolism in everything, right? So I created the five pillars based off of what is core to me, you know, and self-love is core to me. Strength is core to me. Honors is core to me. Discipline is core to me, and wisdom. So I was like, okay, I'm going to write a book giving lessons on my life and some lessons from historical figures about how they implemented these pillars and how other people could use them to be successful or use them for whatever they want. So, you know, it took me a while. I mean, it took me weeks to finish it. I probably wrote it over and over because, you know, once you finish and then you go back and you read, you're like, man, what the hell is this? So, you know, it was a lot of that, a lot of revamping, man. But, you know, there was a time where I was like, you know what, man, I don't care. I'm just about to publish it. Like, I was driving myself absolutely crazy. And yesterday, actually, a friend of mine sent me like a 4-minute message talking about how profound the book actually is, and, you know, that it's a masterpiece, et cetera, et cetera. And this guy, he wrote a book, you know, I'm looking at his book literally right now, like he's an author himself. And he was just giving me so many props on my book. But I feel like what sets mine apart is that I'm using life lessons that I had to personally go through to teach a lesson to my readers. So, you know, it just allowed me to be a lot more vulnerable. And, you know, with that, I was like, okay, I'm gonna just leave people with something that they could reference. Like, say, if you're having self-doubt or anything like that, you might want to read the love chapter. Or if you're feeling, you know, weary and down, you might want to read the strength one, you know, or discipline or wisdom, whichever one that resonates with you at the moment. So, you know, I just gave that's really like what it is in a nutshell. I just gave people, you know, the authentic version of me and what I would use as a reference. And I didn't really want it to be, you know, just full of pointless information. Like sometimes I read books and I just feel like they're just trying to make it long.
Right.
So it's not, you know, it's like, okay, man, come on. Like this was, so I just wrote it because I'm a very straight to the point type of guy. So I wrote it in a way for it to be, you know, rather short, but still profound and impactful at the same time.
You did mention Islam. I did hear one of your episodes where you interviewed one of the members of the Nation of Islam. And I thought that was an incredible episode. You guys dived into a few things, and the fact that you do say that you have a background in Islam. You mentioned the 5%ers. You mentioned a couple of other things. Did that also carry into your entrepreneurship? We'll ask that question first. Did some of that background and that knowledge and seeing some of the, you know, the brothers or what have you, learning those lessons and things like that, did that carry over into your entrepreneurship for you developing businesses and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. Because that actually, you know, it's a part of my foundation. My dad was in the Nation of Islam, my uncle. So I grew up with, you know, men from South Central LA that was all like, maybe it was hardcore in the Nation. You know, like my dad was right next to Minister Khalid Muhammad.
Ooh, boy.
If you know who he was, you could kind of be like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you know, so Minister Khalid Muhammad was the minister of Temple 27 out here in LA. That's when my dad was in the Nation. And my uncle, which is my dad's little brother, would tell me, you know, your dad and Minister Khalid Muhammad were boys. And after I started studying more of Minister Khalid Muhammad, I started to understand why my dad was as, you know, militant as he was. Because I was like, damn, you learn from the most militant guy in the Nation of Islam that ever existed, you know? So, man, it was, you know, I ain't growing up eating pork. I have pictures of me in elementary school, bow ties, part in the head, you know, short haircut. Like I was looked like a straight Nation baby. But that gave me a sense of identity that a lot of black men lacked having. Cause when we were, I was also raised in the church too. And I give the church a lot of credit for my life as well. But the church really didn't have anything that wanted, I feel like it was more so feminine to me rather than, you know, teaching men how to be masculine men. Like when you walk into the Nation of Islam, you see the strongest, most confident, capable black men on the planet. As soon as you, how you doing, brother? All right, over here. You know, it's like they don't play, they're not soft. They're not any of that. And so I was able to contrast between, you know, growing up Christian and being raised in a church, but also my dad being a part of the Nation of Islam. And, you know, I went to the mosque myself, but me also going to the mosque and seeing how men acted, it really gave me a sense of like, okay, I'm a man. I could do it. You know, I have confidence in myself. I'm capable. I can make it happen. You know, and I feel like a lot of us lack that type of resilience and that strength based off of a lot of men in our communities either being taught by women or just a lack of a male presence, you know, because in order to, you know, really fulfill your destiny as a man, I feel like you have to learn from other strong men or be around other strong men in order to keep you afloat. Because raising a man is totally different to me than raising a woman. Like, boys, you have to be on them, yes, because sir. There's so many ways that they could go astray. Like, it is a plethora of ways. Like, my girls, I'm like, okay, but my boys, oh, I have two boys, two girls. I already know. Like, I have to have my boys with me. Like, there's no way, because they could, it's so easy to slip, you know, so easy to slip, especially with the aggression, the anger.
Yes, sir.
You know, us being marginalized in society, you know, your own people trying to kill you. The police is against you. Other races trying to kill you. You know, it's like, damn, it's like you have the whole world against you. So what do you have as your core foundation to make you say, okay, you know, I am worth something? You know, the women are even against you, call you a broke Negro, and you know, you ain't nothing if you don't have this, and you don't make no money, so you can't have no woman, and you going 50-50. You know, it's like, what do we have? So we don't have
a lot of crazy stuff out there today.
You said what?
I said it's a lot of crazy stuff out there today.
Yeah, it is. It is. So I feel like that definitely was a tool that helped me, you know, Islam and, you know, I was kind of born in it. So, but then it's kind of like, it was a great thing because it gave me a foundation of who I am, you know. And if we don't have the foundations of who we are or where we're going to pull this strength, it's easy for us to go astray, which also led me to write the book, you know, Harnessing the Five Pillars of the Militant Grind, you know, because it's like, this is my foundation. I'm going to give my foundation to you and let you go with it. Because it also, you know, in honor, which is one of the pillars, also go through how me being an honorable person helped me survive in the streets of LA. Like, LA just had a taste of soul LA. I'm walking by myself. You know, there's a, you know how it is when our people in the city, man, you see all kinds of stuff. You know what I mean? Especially since it's public. But I'm like, I see my brothers in the nation. I see my brothers I went to school with, that gang bang over here. You know, see this, see that, and I'm good because I'm an honorable person. But if I was not an honorable person and I snaked people, did people wrong, I was, you know, started up all these beefs, I probably wouldn't be able to do that. No,
I want to say this though real quick, because I'm glad you brought all of that out. And when I listened to some of your podcast episodes, that particular episode really drew me in anyway, because I myself also have a background in that. Right. I got a family members that's in the Nation of Islam right now. And I read Message to the Black Man. I've read How to Eat to Live. Our Savior Has Arrived. I've read a ton of books dealing with a lot of that. And also that's also shaped me. So here's what I want to say with a lot of the information, because I know when a lot of people listen to this, there's going to be somewhat of some feedback, some flag, whatever the case may be, because you said quite a bit in, you know, your statements. But here's the thing. Any woman right now that will listen to this particular episode, and I've said this in several circles, send your boys. I understand you might not like the religious aspect of it or whatever the case may be, but allow your boys around some of those men in the Nation of Islam. A lot of what the men do in the Nation of Islam, the FOI, right now, I think it's Minister Tony down there in LA right now. What they do is that they help develop men. They give men the necessary disciplines, right, to safeguard themselves away from a lot of things that's out there on the street, right? They also teach the brothers how to treat women, right? They teach all of that. So I don't understand why a lot of times why women don't want to have their boys around something like that, right? You got to have the boys around something like that where they can become astute. They can become a student. They can learn. They're always in the process of learning, right? Right now, I was reading something a couple of days ago where they was talking about the reading level of just Black boys. It's deplorable at this juncture. And that's partly because they don't see a lot of us doing that, right? When you go to some of the temples or you go to, you know, some of the mosques or something like that, and you get a chance to see Black men in that realm, And the younger black men see that. They say, well, okay, it must be cool to read, right? Because we're all about aesthetics and stuff like that and how people look and whatnot. But once you begin to see a man, a black man with a book in his hand, it becomes less of an issue for you as a younger black man to put a book in your hand, right? So that discipline, that integrity, those characteristics, that character, the moral compass, all of that kind of stuff, those brothers teach that. So if the women will listen to this particular episode and you know of some men that are in the NOI, even some brothers that are in the spirit of that, get your boys around them. Get your young men around them ASAP, because it's going to help quite a bit. And I didn't want to carry on like that, but I was just inspired to say that. You're the star of the show. But I just had to get that out, man.
Nah, bro,
I had to get it out.
I second that. I second that notion with my life. You know, trust me, I know. Like, you are absolutely right. That is a great starting point. I mean, you don't even have to be Muslim.
Correct.
Or whatever. Just
go.
Just see how they operate. I have taken my friends to the mosque. I've taken my friends to see Minister Farrakhan speak. And the way they were after hearing that and being around that energy was totally different. Totally different. When I go to Chicago for Savior's Day, my cousin, he wants to come with me. And we stick out like sore thumbs when we're around people in the nation. But the energy is like, man, it's like you will never find it anywhere else. And it'll really show, you know, our men how to operate, because you see people that looks like you, that's standing for something, that has something to believe in, that's militant, that will die for a woman. You know, the women in the Nation of Islam don't walk to the cars by themselves. You know, like any brother, hey, sister, you need the escort? Okay, we'll be all right. Brother could take her to her car like that, you know? So, yeah, I just want to put that out. Like, he's, you know, this is what you said was major. I second that.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's really nothing like it. And I wish more. So let me plug this real quick, and we're going to get back on track. For the people again that's going to listen to this episode with Brother Sherman. And again, he's mentioning the Nation of Islam and what partially helped him develop his soul. Even if you can't get to a mosque or a temple or whatever the case may be, go and get you a Final Call newspaper. Go and subscribe to the Final Call newspaper. It's digital now. I do a lot of reading myself. It's digital. You can get on that platform. I forget exactly how much it costs, and there's a cost associated with everything, so we shouldn't cry about that. But go and subscribe to the Final Call newspaper. And there you can also begin to have your young boys read some of the periodicals in the paper itself, which is going to help them tremendously if you are really concerned about helping your black boys. But yeah, man, thank you, Sherman, for bringing that up. And that's why I was going to ask, because I had it in my head to ask you anyway when I heard that episode, because I was like, man, this is deep. And what's the brother's name you interviewed? What was his name?
Amin Muhammad.
Amin Muhammad. Got it. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Brother Amin. So, brother, so militant grind, it's a lifestyle, or how would you describe that? It's a brand, yes, but is it a lifestyle? How would you describe militant grind?
Yeah, it's a lifestyle, because, you know, I look at it, you know, from my background, you know, Nation of Islam, my dad being in the army and being around all of these militant men. To be militant is more so, to me, it's just like staying on track and not deviating from it, whatever it may be, you know. And now we're in a world, you know, I talk about this to my book, we're in a world that's full of distractions and people trying to, you know, steal your energy in, you know, hey, pay attention to this, or hey, do this, or hey, this is a new thing, or hey. But then it's like, who is going to be militant and, you know, steadfast with their mission, you know? Because somebody could come up to me and be like, man, I know this job that's paying such and such and such and such. And I'm like, oh, really? All right, come on, let's go. But now I'm not on track with my mission that I set out to be. You know, it's like Nipsey was a perfect example of that, on being militant with your grind. And I knew Nipsey. And there was a time where I was in the studio with him, and he there was a rumor going on around him signing with Maybach Music. And I asked Nip, I was like, hey, Nip, you know, you gonna sign up with Maybach Music or what? And, you know, it was probably a promise of money, resources, opportunities, whatever. And this is years before, like 2011 or 12 when I asked him, you know, like before his first album came out. So, you know, when I asked him, he could have took the opportunity and been on. But then took 6 years later for him to come out with his first real album release. And he, you know, he looked me in my eye and he said, nah, cuz this All Money In. And I was just like, what? You know, and I'm like, man, you could have, you know, no telling what could have, you know, what could have happened. But he stayed militant. He stayed steady. He was like, nah, I'm not deviating from my mission because it's life or death with me. You know, if you were in any type of militant situation, like say me being from L.A., it's like you had to be militant because, you know, situation could be life or death for you. So you have to take things serious, you know. So that's where my whole philosophy comes from when it comes to militant grind. It's a lifestyle. It's not just working out. It's not just, you know, learning how to shoot or do this or do that. You could apply militance to any area in your life, no matter who you are. If you're a teacher, be the best teacher. Give more resources to your students. Help your students learn. Help your students be on point. And as the world, you know, goes on with social media and negativity and, you know, all this sexual immorality and all these different things being more pushed out more than ever in my existence, you know, there's pictures that women will put on Instagram that back in the day I would beg a woman for like 8 hours to send me that type of picture. Now you could just, you know, go on Instagram and boop, it's right there. Like nothing is left to the imagination at all. Nothing. I mean, there's I forgot her name, but man, I wish the lady that was on she was one of the scientists on the NASA scientists on Hidden Figures. I forgot. Janelle Monáe. So I'm on the internet and I see a video.
Are you talking about the Janelle characters Monáe in the movie? You're talking about the not the actual, you're talking about the characters that played the actual figures in the movie.
She was an actress. Yeah. And then like I'm on the internet, I'm like, man, I have my daughter watch Hidden Figures, you know. And so it's like, what if she became a fan of the movie, ended up, you know, finding Janelle Monáe and then seeing Janelle Monáe flash her breast out in public to everyone. You know, it's like, what the hell is this world coming to? You know, like our strong black women, when I was, you know, I'm not sure how old you are. Are you in your mid-30s?
Oh, brother, I'm a little older than that. but go ahead. I'm relating to everything that you're talking about.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, back in the day, you wouldn't see Angela Bassett do anything like that. Or, you know, it's like women have some type of substance. But now it's like, if you want to succeed, show your behind, show your breasts. Show this, show that. And it's like, man, it's just becoming sick. So I'm like, you know, what's gonna battle between us? Like, who's gonna be militant with their values, with who they really are, and not succumb to the you know, not saying that it's a bad thing or a good thing, but I just feel like the world is off balance. Like in the world there's always been, you know, whores or prostitutes or whatever, like going all the way back in the history of the world. But nowadays it's like a good girl will see that this is her only opportunity to succeed in life is by doing this, you know, or like doing that. It's like, oh man, why would I go get a college degree when OnlyFans is paying me $25,000 a month? You know, like what's the point of this? So yeah, man. I mean, like, you know, it has to be something. And this is just what it is for me. It's like, man, like we need something to give us a stronghold to not really have us deviate from, you know, the path that we're set to be on, because it's easy to, you know, to fall on the wayside, to follow this or to do this scheme or do this scam or whatever, to knock us off track from what I say is our purpose.
A couple of things real quick, and we're going to begin to wrap it up. you know, you did mention Nipsey, and man, I didn't know Nip. I fell in love with Nip, just his persona, the way he did things, the way he moved. The music was definitely celebrated. The fact that he developed his own clothing line. You know, you followed his story and you was like, damn, you know, this brother's going to be something else. And even in his passing, rest in heaven, he's still teaching lessons. You know, I don't know if anybody actually is witnessing that, but Nipsey is still teaching us lessons, even beyond the grave. So if you really study his life and his legacy, you can learn a lot from what that brother did. And he was definitely independent. He didn't want to do, you know, anything where anybody would be able to take something from him. But definitely shout out to Nipsey, man, and, you know, love that brother. And it hurt me. I'm Midwest, living down in Georgia, but when I heard what happened to him, it hit me hard, brother. I was like, man.
Man, that was probably one of the worst deaths I've ever experienced in my life.
And like I'm saying, I'm not from L.A. or nothing like that. I never met a man or nothing like that. It's just the fact that you saw an inspiring brother, man. He didn't play around. He was on his grind. He was on his square. And when that happened, I was like, damn. You know, it really hit me hard. And the other thing, too, like that you kind of mentioned, man, is that when you were talking about our sisters, you know, and again, this is no strike against our sisters and stuff like that. It's just this world makes everything appealing. I remember in reading in The Torchlight for America, which is a book written by Minister Louis Farrakhan, there's a section in there that he wrote that's called A Society of Perverse Incentives, right? And he was talking about how this society allows you to be perverse and they reward you for it. So, yeah, you really can't blame the sister for making $25,000 in a week. But doing the OnlyFans, right? Because they're offering that, you know? Call girls making $2,000 a pop, you know what I'm saying? They're offering that. You know, this is what this world has actually developed. So, you know, some of the teachers that are out here that are teaching, that are in these schools, they can't even make enough money. And that teacher, they're supposed to be teaching the future. Simultaneously, you got somebody out here that can open up an OnlyFans and become a millionaire within less than 12 months. You know, which is crazy. It's crazy to me that would actually happen. So people are going to school to be legitimate, to do something honorable, and then to only be outdone by somebody that's doing something that's not honorable and getting all kinds of money for it, which is crazy. So I look at the system more than anything else. But yeah, man, you bought out so much. I've been having a great time listening to you and your story. Man, I just hope when people listen to this, they really go and check you out and see what you're doing. I'm going to make sure that we have all the links, you know, for you in the notes where people can click on your website and visit you and see everything that you're doing. And I just want to salute you, brother, for staying on your grind, doing everything that you are purposed to do. So as we wrap up, is there any advice that you want to give to the listening audience about maintaining discipline, accountability, staying motivated and on their journeys or things like that?
Well, we go back to, you know, what I mentioned, like what kept me going was not, well, it wasn't the money. It was more so what the money could do for me. You know, since I was a child. So, you know, when I feel like when we focus on the money or, you know, the materialism, that gets old and that gets played out, but it's more so, you know, what's the purpose behind it for me? Like, I ended up knowing that I was never really motivated by money. Like, I thought that I was, but then when I got the money, it really didn't do anything for me. So I'm more fulfilled when it comes to me doing things that I actually love to do that's purposeful for me. Like, I feel better making, you know, selling a shirt and profiting, you know, a couple $10 fit, you know, whatever the price, right? And getting someone to support me than I would be if I closed a loan, you know, or whatever, like doing things like that, you know? So it's like, what will make you feel more fulfilled more than anything? You know, what will make you feel like you're more so within your purpose, but also know that everyone has a different journey. Like, your journey could be you doing loans, and helping people get loans and get money and things like that. But that wasn't fulfilling for me. So I had to find what was more fulfilling for me. And for each and every person, it's going to be a different thing, I feel. But as long as you're true to yourself and you're waking up every day and you love it and you feel like this is a great purpose and you're helping people, you're not using people, you're not putting people in a worse situation than what they were in before they talked to you, then I feel like that's always going to be a great thing.
Perfect. Perfect. That's a hell of a way to end out too. Sherman, man, I really want to thank you for joining me today and sharing your story and all the inspiration and everything that you've done for yourself and your family. We didn't get a chance to actually talk about the family. You mentioned it, but you know, the two boys, the two girls, we definitely highlighted the boys and making sure we do something with them early on. I tell a lot of people that anyway, man, get your boys early. Don't let them get past the age of 10 and not have a strong man to be able to discipline them. Don't let them go beyond the age of 10. Once they get past 10, man, and you haven't grounded them, you're in trouble.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, trust me. I know. That's why I'm on my workout tip. I'm watching how I operate around them because they're watching. So, yeah, man. Like my kids love to work out with me. You know, they'll say, okay, come on, I want to exercise, because that's all they see me do. So you definitely have to be the example that you want them to be, you know. That's very important. But yeah, man, we could fit anytime, bro. Just let me know. I'd love to get back on, man. You know, if you want to do an Instagram live one day or however, we could definitely get something in motion. I really enjoy it.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, man. I'm thoroughly excited to, you know, hurry up and get on the editing process. But I know I got to take a break for a minute so I can knock it, so I can retain this information. You know what I mean? And go back and listen and everything. Yeah. But listen, it's been a pleasure. And to all the listeners, make sure you tune in. Make sure you check out themilitantgrind.com. Again, this information will be in the show notes. You'll be able to access it. For those that need podcasting services, editing your podcast, making it sound level, things like that, reach out to me as well. That's going to be in the show notes. I have a Fiverr account set up for people that want to have their podcast edited and done in a way that makes it sound good. I present those type of services. But yeah, so thank everybody, and especially thank you, Sherman, for coming on the show. This has been another episode of the All Things Black Podcast. I'm your host, Daryl Barnes, and we're out.